It took me the rest of the night and part of the rest of the morning, but I worked out how I could murder someone in the same manner that Tommy Tom and Jennifer Stanton had been killed. After the fifth or sixth time I checked the figures, I stared at my calculations. It didn't make any sense. It was impossible. Or maybe we were all underestimating just how dangerous this killer was. I grabbed my duster and headed out without bothering to check my books. I don't keep any mirrors in my home. Too many things can use mirrors as windows or doors. But I was pretty sure I looked like a wreck. The Studebaker's rearview mirror confirmed this. My face was haggard, with a shadow of beard, deep circles under bloodshot eyes, and hair that looked as though it had been riding a speeding motorcycle through a cloud of greasy smoke. Smoothing your hair back with sweaty palms as a study habit will do that to you, especially if you do it for 12 or 14 hours straight. It didn't matter. Murphy wanted this information, and she needed to have it. Things were bad. They were very, very bad. I made quick time down to the station, knowing Murphy would want to hear this from me face to face. The police station Murphy worked in was one in an aged complex of buildings that housed the Metro Police Department. It was run down, sagging in places like an old soldier who nonetheless stood at attention and struggled to hold in his gut. There was graffiti along one wall that the janitor wouldn't come to scrub off until Monday morning. I parked in the visitor's parking, easy to do on a Saturday morning, and headed up the steps and into the building. The desk sergeant wasn't the usual mustached old warhorse who I had run into before, but a graying matron with steely eyes who disapproved of me and my lifestyle in a single glance, then made me wait while she called up Murphy. While I waited, a pair of officers came in, dragging a handcuffed man between them. He wasn't resisting them, just the opposite, in fact. His head was thrown down and he was moaning in an almost musical way. He was on the thin side, but I got the impression he was young. His denim jeans and jacket were battered, unkempt, as was his hair. "That DUI we called in. We're going to take him up to holding until he can see straight." The desk sergeant passed a clipboard over, and one of the officers took it under his arm before the two of them dragged the young man up the stairs. I waited, rubbing at my tired eyes, until the sergeant managed to get through to someone upstairs. She gave a rather surprised, "Huh?" and then said, "All right, Lieutenant, I'll send him on up." She waved a hand at me to go on past. I could feel her eyes on me as I went by, and I smoothed my palm self-consciously over my head and jaw. Special Investigations kept a little waiting area just within the door at the top of the staircase. It consisted of four wooden chairs and a sagging old couch that would probably kill your back if you tried to sleep on it. Murphy's office was at the end of a double row of cubicles. Murphy stood inside her office with the phone pressed to her ear, wearing a martyred expression. She looked like a teenager having a fight with her out-of-town boyfriend, though she'd tear my head off if she heard me saying any such thing. I waved my hand, and she nodded back at me. She pointed at the waiting area and then shut her office door. I took a seat in one of the chairs and leaned my head back against the wall. I had just closed my eyes when I heard a scream from behind me in the hallway. There was a struggling sound and a few startled exclamations before the scream repeated itself, closer this time. I acted without thinking. I was too tired to think. I rose and went into the hall, towards the source of the sound. To my left was the staircase going, and to my right was the hallway stretched ahead of me. A figure appeared, a silhouette of a running man, moving towards me in long strides. It was the man who had hung so limply between the two officers, humming a few minutes before. He was the one screaming. I heard a scrabbling sound, and then the pair of officers I had seen downstairs a few moments before came around the corner. Neither one of them was a young man anymore, and they both ran with their bellies out, puffing for breath, holding their gun belts against their hips with one hand. "Stop!" said one of the officers, panting. "Stop that man!" The hair on the back of my neck prickled. The man running towards me kept on screaming, high and terrified, his voice a long and uninterrupted peal of something. Terror, panic, lust, rage, all rolled up into a ball and sent spewing out into the air through his vocal cords. I had a quick impression of wide, staring eyes and a dirty face, a denim jacket and old jeans as he came down the shadowy hallway. His hands were behind his back, presumably held there by cuffs. He wasn't seeing the hall he was running through. I don't know what he was looking at, but I got the impression I didn't want to know. He came hurtling towards me and the stairs, blind and dangerous to himself.
It wasn't any of my business, but I couldn't let him break himself apart in a tumble down the stairs. I threw myself toward him as hard as I could, attempting to put my shoulder into his stomach and drive him backwards in a football-style tackle. There was a reason I got cut every year during high school. I rammed into him, but he just whuffed out of breath and spun to one side into a wall. It was as though he hadn't seen me coming and had no realization I was there. He just kept staring blindly and screaming, careening off the wall, and continuing on his way toward the stairs. I went down to the floor, my head abruptly throbbing again where the unknown tough had wrapped me with a baseball bat last night. One good thing about being as tall as I am, I have long arms. I rolled back toward him and lashed out with one hand, fingers clutching. I caught his jeans at the cuff and gave his leg a solid sideways tug. That did it. He spun, off-balanced, and went down to the tile floor. The scream stopped as the fall took the wind out of him. He slid to the top of the stairs and stopped, feebly struggling. The officers pounded past me towards him, one going to either side. And then something strange happened. The young man looked at me, his eyes rounded and dilated, until I thought they had turned into huge black coins, dotted onto his bloodshot eyeballs. His eyes rolled back into his head until he could hardly have been able to see, and he started to shout in a clarion voice, "Wizard!" he trumpeted. "Wizard! I see you! I see you, wizard! I see things that follow! Those who walk before, and he who walks behind! They come for you!" "Christ on a crutch," the shorter, rounder officer said, as they took the man by his arms and dragged him back down the hall. "Junkies, thanks for the assist, buddy." I stared at the man, stunned. I caught the sleeve of the other officer. "What's going on, sir?" I asked him. He stopped, letting the prisoner hang behind him and his partner. The prisoner's head was bowed forward and his eyes were still rolled back, but he had his head turned toward me and was grinning a horrible, toothy grin. His forehead was wrinkled oddly, almost as though he were somehow focusing on me through the bones of his brow ridges and the frontal lobes of his brain. "Junkie," the taller officer said. "One of those new three-eye punks caught him down by the lake in his car with nearly 4 grams of the stuff. Probably more in him." He shook his head. "You okay?" "Fine, fine," I assured him. "Three-eye, that new drug?" The shorter officer snorted. "One that's supposed to make them see the spirit world, that kind of crap." The taller one nodded. "Stuff hooks harder than crack. Thanks for the help. I didn't know you were a civilian, though. Didn't expect anyone but police down here this time of day." "No problem," I assured him. "I'm fine." "Hey," the stouter one said. He squinted at me and shook his finger. "Aren't you that guy, that psychic consultant Carmichael told me about?" "I'll take the fifth," I said to him with a grin that I didn't feel. The two officers chuckled and turned back to their business, quickly shouldering me aside as they dragged their prisoner away. He whispered in a mad little voice all the way down the hall, see you, wizard, see he who walks behind." I returned to my chair in the waiting area at the end of the row of cubicles and sat down, my head throbbing, my stomach rolling uncomfortably. He who walks behind. I had never seen the junkie before, never been close to him. I hadn't sensed the subtle tension of power in the air around him that signified the presence of a magical practitioner. So how the hell had he seen the shadow of he who walks behind flowing in my wake? For reasons I don't have time to go into now, I am marked, indelibly, with the remnants of the presence of a hunter spirit, a sort of spectral hitman known as he who walks behind. I had beaten long odds in surviving the enemy of mine who had called up he who walks behind and sent him after me. But even though the hunter spirit had never gotten to me, the mark could still be seen upon me by those who knew how, by using the third sight, stretching out behind me like a long and horribly shaped shadow, sort of a spiritual scar to remind me of the encounter. But only a wizard had that kind of vision, the ability to sense the auras and manifestations of magical phenomena. And that junkie had been no wizard.